This week's episode was brought to you by Deadleaf and listeners like you. If you would like to support the show and hear all our extended episodes, get a bonus sticker and access to our high security cleared top secret Discord server, please visit www.patreon.com/thewholerabbit, where your donation of just $5 gets you all the stuff I just mentioned, and $20 gets you a monthly tarot reading from yours truly. In this episode, we discuss the most frightful, disturbing, and gruesome atrocities we have ever researched. Naturally, if you are under the impression that government authority is never abused and innocent people never come to harm secretly in the pursuit of medical knowledge, you should probably skip this episode because I don't want to be the one responsible for your eyes exploding, ears exploding, whatever. We discuss atrocities performed by America, Great Britain, Nazi Germany, and Imperial Japan. So don your hazmat suits, they live glasses, a big old bottle of colloidal silver, and enjoy the show.
I don't feel sexy today. I feel sweaty.
That's sexy. Smelly.
I mean, yeah, those things aren't mutually exclusive.
Dude, man, yeah. Smell is the best.
If you say so, Mari.
It's true. It's called pheromones.
Yeah,
like a stinky girl sometimes.
Pheromones.
Well, yeah, but did you know that if men smell other stinky men, they work harder and you can last longer when you're working?
Huh. Yeah. Wow.
The pheromone actually stimulates men as well, but it makes you more like you can actually
aggressive.
Have more stamina. You're not aggressive, but you have more stamina. Like
hold my beer?
Yes.
Like, why do men do the most ridiculous things that are outside of their pay grade when they're around
men? They get so much energy off the smell of the other men.
That's gross.
No, it's science.
It's not gross. It's fine.
No,
science rules.
But it explains why I like that smell when I probably shouldn't. Oh, and they also did a scientific test, where they gave a bunch of women these sweaty t-shirts from different men. And there's certain kind of, like, women were attracted to a certain kind of smell of someone who worked harder.
That's very interesting.
And then you can also smell diet and health through it somehow. But you don't process it at all. Like, it's all subconscious.
Hannibal Lecter could tell if somebody was schizophrenic by the smell of their sweat.
Did you know that you can also, sometimes people can also sense when a lot of women are on their period in a certain area?
I believe that. Anton LaVey said that was built into our instincts and that we had adapted by covering it with all these artificial scents.
Oh, yeah. Or shaving. Also, because your body hair is supposed to waft the smell farther to attract other mates or whatever. So, like, by shaving body hair, you're also eliminating the odors, like, in that way. Like, it doesn't travel as far.
That's fascinating because I think a cute girl with armpit hair is even cuter.
I mean, yeah, I like it too.
I think people look like children without pubic.
Agree.
And it makes me uncomfortable.
Agree. It's fine for like, oh my God, I didn't know what did we do last night? Like if you just did it for fun, but like to do it every week, like a ritual is like really kind of is unsettling to me. This is, what am I doing this for? You know what I mean?
What assholes they are, those Illuminati.
They like getting fucked in the asshole anyway.
Is there anything wrong with that, Mari?
No, it's awesome.
Okay, just making sure.
Thank you, Dingus.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I mean, I don't, but...
I do.
Yeah, you just had to clear the air on that one, huh?
I don't think there's anything wrong with it. It's just not, I'm just not into it.
That's the altar of their transmutation ritual, is the anus.
If I really like you, I might put my tongue in your anus. Just
it's got to be a special occasion, gotta say.
Mari's ice cream cone joke still makes me laugh.
Oh my God.
Can we get I forgot it. Can we get it can you reuse it real quick?
Reuse what?
Your ice cream cone joke.
Which one?
I don't know.
About eating ass of a man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You hold it like an ice cream cone, right?
Oh, shit.
You got the two scoops right on top of the cone. And you go into the third one on top, right?
Yeah.
It's got handlebar, right? It's good. You got to be careful, though, because sometimes the cone will leak at the bottom. So you got to eat it really fast.
Thanks for that.
Hey, you fucking asked for it.
I did. I didn't know what I was asking for. You knew better than me.
I know a lot about ice cream cones. And we've got three scoops.
Just imagine.
Joe Biden likes chocolate chip.
You're just running a ice cream parlor. It's a corgi behind the counter.
Aw, that's kind of cute.
Ari the ass-eating corgi.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the whole
rabbit.
Oh, damn. Oh, every time, man.
Yeah, no, just
that
once.
That was too good. That was too good.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Whole Rabbit, where we provide you with more than warm blankets and free healthcare. We provide you with gonorrhea, syphilis, malaria, typhoid, gangrene, halitosis, canker sores, anthrax, bubonic plague, lung blisters, butt bubbles, 50 bucks, and Krispy Kreme donuts, because this week we're discussing government-funded human experimentation. I'm your
Don't
host.
Don't forget the AIDS.
I'm your host, Luke Madrid, the hacking rabbit. I'm joined by the woofer of wild wisdoms, Mari-sama.
Awoo!
The dollop of disaster, Darth Dingus. And the meter of malcontents, Malachor 5.
Stay away from us. We're sick.
I'll stay downwind.
Y'all are trying to tell me that armpit hair has nothing to do with the show. And it opens with us talking about how people used to think that stinky air caused disease.
Oh, that's true. And oh, yeah, that's why they have the plague masks. The little beaks were not for ornamentation. They would put herbs in it so that the practitioner, they thought that the good smell would clean the bad smell.
They didn't want to smell your butt, so they covered themselves.
Well, they thought it killed the disease that you had. Like hand sanitizers, which don't actually work like you think.
I do find it interesting how even back then they sort of had a concept of diseases being carried on the air. Like, they still knew that if you were close to a sick person, you were going
to
get it.
Yeah. You didn't even have to touch them, right? Like, you could just breathe the same air. So they figured it was some kind of smell or
I'm not sure. I think mostly it was transmitted from infected fleas.
Oh, black plague. Yeah, the black plague was.
Yeah, rats and fleas that were on the rats.
Mm-hmm. Well, that will probably come up in our extended episode, but in terms of miasma theory, it was held that it was essentially bad air, and more specifically, night air that caused disease. And it was said to come from rotting organic matter, or even in some cases, the breath of animals. So there's one case of it being described as the breath of noxious, poisonous animals being mixed with the mists and wafting in from the swamp, causing people to get sick. And, you know, the word malaria means bad air, so that's where we get that word.
Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah, but it was actually turned out to be mosquitoes that lived in the water in the swamp. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. And then just the fact that they thought that night air or bad air, it's like that totally clarifies the reason why a lot of the older doctors, like the ancient kind of healers, would say sunshine and fresh air would be like a treatment for most diseases.
Absolutely.
Well, fresh air is like just the concept, I guess, that we have.
Moving air.
To help people, yeah, or just outside air. Like it is known to help people recover from illness, you know, just not cancer or AIDS.
The uranium springs we talked about last time.
Uranium. Okay, sorry.
Well, it's sort of one of these household myths that even I grew up with, because I watched The Rugrats, and there's an episode where Tommy gets sick because his mom leaves the window open at night. But it harkens back to this, well, you don't want to get cold while you're sleeping, but like, come on. You know.
I remember my grandmother saying shit like that, actually.
Yeah, you'll catch a cold. Close the window.
Yeah, even catching a cold or going out at night without a jacket, it's this idea that just the night air itself will make you sick. Mm.
I can just imagine my grandmother now going, that's why they call it a cold, boy. Ain't you got no common sense? That's what she said.
But, I mean, even a cold is transmitted on the air. Like, all colds are pretty much, coronaviruses. So, you know, they're one of the most ancient kinds of viruses, by the way, a lot of them.
Well, you know what else traveled on the air, Mari?
Well, what I say is, in the notes you have here, that some of the academics in the early 19th century even started to use this theory to suggest that, like, if you smelled food, you would become fat.
Obesity, Mari! Obesity travels on the air, Mari!
That is so insane. Like, this sounds like something that a dick would say on one of those forums where they all encourage each other.
Ah, yes, America's Lord Mist.
Lord Mist.
Lord Mist.
That sounds delicious.
That explains a lot, if that's true.
It does.
You just wave a potato around in it, it becomes French fries.
Nobody would need to crack open these dusty old tomes.
Fast food restaurants would go out of business.
I firmly believe that the only reason fast food restaurants stay in business is because people here don't know how to cook. And if they knew how to cook, we'd have whatever. The episode is about cutting people open, but against their consent, right?
That's true.
Okay. Forced to liposuction.
Are you trying to say fast food is not human experimentation? Because
just thinking that smelling.
Ah, man, it's pretty goddamn close.
Yeah, no, it is. Most definitely.
I just feel like experimentation implies something deliberate, where this is more just out of carelessness.
I was going to say, like, at least I volunteered to eat the garbage hamburger at 2 a.m. hungover from my friend's house.
Well, that brings us to the American and, of course, British experiments. The San Jose Project during World War II in the USA was conducted at Panama Base. It was here experiments with mustard gas were done on the human body. U.S. troops of mainly African-American, Puerto Rican, and Japanese descent. The USA likely gassed more Americans during these experiments than actually gassed enemies in the battlefield. Experiments included patch testing liquid mustard gas on skin, field tests of exposure to mustard gas in an outdoor setting, and chamber tests where mustard gas was just pumped into a closed room with soldiers in it.
So they select, oh my God, that's awful. Mustard gas is like one of the worst things on the planet.
Yeah, we discussed that last time, how when you inhale it literally from inside out, doesn't it?
Yeah, I find it deeply terrifying. It covers you in third degree chemical burns wherever it touches, and everything sloughs off.
I'll pass on that.
It was known to be like the most painful thing that could happen to you during the war.
It's a corrosive gas, isn't it?
I don't know if it's specifically corrosive. I forget like the exact thing that happens when it hits you, but the point is it fucking burns. And
damages your DNA.
I didn't. Yeah, you get cancer from it. Like your likelihood of getting cancer goes way up too.
Oh.
Also due to the extensive scarring. Anytime you have like repetitive or extensive tissue damage somewhere, your chance of getting cancer raises significantly.
Oh my gosh.
That's why you shouldn't drink your coffee too hot.
You want to know what it smells like?
Sure.
Mustard?
Yeah.
Actually, burning garlic, horseradish, sweet, and agreeable. Ooh. You're like, oh, what's that? This is World War One. You haven't had a steak in a minute. And you're like, what? What's that smell? Oh, my lungs, blisters. So yeah, your lungs filled with blisters.
Oh,
so,
shit.
They told these soldiers that whatever we do to you, we're going to take care of you. And that just didn't happen because the experiments were secret. So when they went to go get help for them, they're like, hey, I was part of this secret experiment and they messed up my lungs. And they're like, yeah, what secret experiment, buddy?
Looks like a rash.
I don't see anything wrong.
Ringworm. And it's like just a visible patch of bone with like some twitching muscle matter here and there.
Wow.
So jeez, finally.
I can't believe that it took so long. It was like 2015 before a story was put out on this. What NPR put out a story that a survivor broke telling his own personal experience, and which finally prompted the Department of Veteran Affairs to actually do something about it. Like, that's insane that it took that long, though, for somebody to even say anything.
So these were our soldiers, just to clarify?
Yeah. Ours.
What the fuck? Well, but I guess we... more. Okay, let's continue. Do we touch the psychedelic experiments at all at Edgewood?
That's part two.
All right, cool.
I wanted to also talk, what about Agent Orange?
Part two.
Okay.
God, those are terrible.
Go ahead, Luke.
Well, so the Redcoats, otherwise known as the British, carried out parallel experiments on Indian soldiers from India during World War II. Porton Down, one of the largest biological weapons labs in the world, carried out these tests on the general populace as well, along with microorganisms and other deadly chemicals between 1940 and 1979 under the guise of air pollution and weather experiments.
It's just a weather balloon, y'all.
The Ministry of Defense turned large portions of their country into a giant laboratory to conduct a series of secret germ warfare tests on the public, says The Guardian in 2002. When confronted about these tests, the Ministry of Defense claimed only unharmful substances were used during the tests, though the evidence points to a very different story. Large quantities of zinc cadmium sulfide were dumped from planes flying overhead. Cadmium is known to be carcinogenic. A large military ship called the Ice Whale also sprayed E. coli around approximately 10 miles of radius of England's south coast.
Nice.
That's so reckless.
E. coli. Yeah, that's one way to put it. Reckless.
It's fucking tasteless, though. It's like,
that's really shitty.
Yeah.
Get it?
Dude, somebody's... Mommy!
Why is Grandma pooping so much? She's not breathing anymore. Mummy?
She's crying blood. She's crying blood, I say.
Mummy, who's going to make the crumpets and scones now? We all know you can't cook.
Why won't me baby drink its milk?
So another experiment during this time involves spraying Serratia Morrisons, which is actually a very good brand name, bacteria with anthrax stimulant into the air in large quantities over civilian populations.
Oh, BT dubs, y'all.
What the fuck?
Anthrax is a type of mold spore, if I'm not mistaken, which is actually has it paralyzes you.
It's like a necrotic mold.
Right. It's a mold spore. And if they put bacteria on a spore, guess what spores do? They travel in the wind really well. So they combine a bacteria with a fungus. That's nice.
Also, just putting this out there, anthrax is actually just a bioweapon. Like, it's not of natural origin.
I used to think it was. I used to think it was like when they said, oh, it's like a specific kind of, you know, fungal spore that blah, blah. And like now that I'm older, I'm like, that was totally manufactured in a lab. Like, and the guy, you know, how they were like, oh, people anthrax and everyone should be afraid, like in the mail. That was all probably the CIA.
I remember that a little bit. I was extremely worried.
I was scared too. And we would make jokes about like powder and envelopes in school and stuff. But it's like, that was all the, like, it was an inside job. Anyway,
that was when System of a Down was really big.
Yeah. But can like regular people make that shit?
I don't think we should
answer that question on this show.
I don't even know how it's made, but it's some kind of super spore. It's like a super fungus. That's why.
If it's in the mail, it's from some government.
Okay. This is off topic.
No.
It was off topic.
Well, it's an experiment at that point. Like, how effective would this test be? Or maybe it's an accident.
My world history teacher in college said that some of the reports from the plague times and the Black Death sounded a bit like anthrax. So maybe he was just wrong. I don't know.
It could. You know how people get sick from black mold? I mean, that's a thing.
I mean, like, even if people were getting anthrax during the Black Plague, you can rest assured that most of those deaths were the Black Plague.
Yeah.
The
Black Plague doesn't kill you in like 18 hours or something. So many people died that way. During the Black Death.
Well, anthrax is a neurological. The fungus produces a neurological poison once it roots somewhere, and it usually roots in your lungs because you breathe it.
And it causes you to. It causes like terrible boils and blisters as well. It's almost like a fucking biblical plague.
But it's a fungus.
Leprosy, almost.
And it's a spore, which is interesting because you can expose it to extreme heat and extreme cold, and the spores will survive. That's how mushrooms spread.
And that's
By listening to the prisoners that they used it on in Unit 731, the thing that I could relate to, because all that stuff I could not relate to because it was so horrible, was that anthrax caused your tonsils to swell up to the point where you could hardly breathe or swallow, they were like pussy and draining, but that was happening all to your internal organs as well.
Oh.
So it was very uncomfortable.
And then they put the British people put a bacteria on it and then sprayed it over their own continent. Very cool.
Yeah. So this is why, even if the chemtrail people are wrong, it's only by decade. You know those people that just believe that chemtrail believers are totally insane and that, we'd never spray. Why would they spray their own population? Because we did that shit. It actually happened.
Already happening.
People are allowed to be paranoid. I'm sorry. Like, you can't just be like, well, that guy's an idiot. Well, it's like, no, dude, they actually did that shit in World War II. You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah. Do you guys know how like DEET was related to like birth defects and stuff?
Yeah.
Remember that? Okay, I grew up in a neighborhood that was sprayed with DEET every fucking month. And guess what? I grew up in the most mosquito-free, perfect neighborhood in the whole world. But I don't know what it did to me, but like I'm okay. But like some of this stuff, like I understand how DEET can hurt the environment, but like there's something like the fact that they could spray that and it's been proven that it has effects on like not only people but wildlife populations. It kills honeybees, that's why they stopped spraying it. But they sprayed it for like 40 years. So like what's to stop them from spraying aerosols on top of us to the weather or whatever they're doing? And it would like actually make us sick when it falls down.
I was once sped past by a pesticide truck back when I lived in Texas. If anybody here happens to live in some kind of like wet, humid region of the Southeast United States, you know what I'm talking about, where you have the fucking mosquito trucks that spray the pesticides. And I was walking to the fucking convenience store at like 9 o'clock at night in Port Arthur, Texas, and this shit runs by and I get sprayed full body with whatever it's putting out
there.
I would stay inside and then I'd go play outside afterwards.
Do you feel hungover? My fucking heart started fluttering and I almost fainted. Like it was a weird experience. Like I started stumbling and shit and like salivating really hard.
Yeah. That means you're trying to get it, your body's trying to get it out of your mucous membrane.
Yeah, it sucked.
Yeah, no.
It made me feel funny.
That should only happen when you see a bag of Cheetos.
Oh, flaming hot Cheetos, though. Chemtrails, there's something called Morgellons disease that people claim that causes. It's like a skin condition. Apparently, they spray metal aerosols, and I believe that chemtrails are sprayed so that HARP or the weather modification system can actually work more effectively.
I'm with you. It's They're trying to mess with the like ozone layer.
Well, they put metal ions in the atmosphere, and then when they beam radio waves into it, if they do a radio laser into it, it actually irradiates the atmosphere and causes rain to condense.
Yeah, so I've heard of that.
Yeah, but that's why when people like chemtrails might be real, but the fact that like you're spraying these aerosols, what happens when they fall to the ground and get in the environment? And I really don't think these experiments, like the people that did this experiment to modify weather, they're not thinking about, you know how we learned about the rain cycle in school, like how rain falls down, goes to the ground, well water, and then comes back up and evaporates. Like they didn't really study like, okay, what happens when these metals fall on the ground? Like it poisons things. Because the aerosols they use, aluminum and a magnesium aerosol that they use, and the aluminum one is a chemical that's also used in deodorant that's also been linked to lymphatic cancer that starts in the armpit from the solid stick.
It's the antiperspirant type.
Yeah, the antiperspirant that has aluminum oxide in it. There's something about aluminum oxide that does that. So all these diseases that they claim from chemtrails, like I really get annoyed when they're dismissed because there is some grounds to like looking into this.
I want to say my own personal experience regarding this, because I used to be one of those gnarly, weird conspiracy hippies back in 2012. And to be fair, let's say these things are just contrails and they're just natural phenomena. It happens whenever an airplane goes by. I never, ever, ever, ever see this anymore, where you'd have the whole sky completely crisscrossed with these contrails, right?
Stay all day.
All day, or it would be a perfectly blue sunny day, and then suddenly, all of a sudden, contrails, quote, start coming out of the back of these planes, and it's suddenly very foggy outside. Like, I never see that anymore. I don't see it happen anymore. I can't walk outside and take a picture of it because it doesn't happen. But it used to.
Well, in my area. It happens here, but I feel like they only send a few ships now. Like, there's only a few of them now, but at the same time, it conditions. But I've also seen, at the same time a contrail is happening in the sky, I've seen a commercial jet going. I mean, it might be lower in the atmosphere. Who knows? But I've seen a jet airplane going, and it has like a slight contrail that's obviously water vapor, and it dissipates within 15 or 30 minutes. It dissipates, whereas the other ones don't.
They spread out and spread out and spread out.
They kind of like it putting, yeah. Yes, it's not the same medium as the water vapes out of an airplane engine.
I don't see it that much anymore in my area, to be honest.
I think they're on to you over there, but I'm in Georgia, and definitely every time I see those in the air, the next day it's probably humid or it rains.
I always kind of just chalked it up to atmospheric conditions before moisture sets in.
It could be too.
I'm skeptical of my own paranoia, but this is why I have empathy for my paranoia, is because y'all, they sprayed us with, this is back when people went to church.
Yeah, and it's like, I'm skeptical too, but at the same time, like Dingus said, it could very well be atmospheric conditions that I don't understand. Like maybe that jet is like almost to the ionosphere. Like I don't know where it is by looking at it.
I've entertained the idea of chemtrails before, and like I'm still kind of open to it, but I'm also thinking maybe Bohemian Grove would be at far less risk of catching on fire. I'm just, you know, unless they're sacrificing it so they can chill in their new Nazi nuke vault.
Delayed. So Mari says that she still sees these things happen in the South sometimes. But in terms of actual facts that we can prove, our next story begins in the South as well, in Tuskegee, Alabama, which is a small rural town of low income. From what I understand, it was chosen partially because it used to have a hospital, but it had closed down, leaving many people in the area in need of healthcare. Of course, this area was also, it was like, what, predominantly black?
Okay, it's in, it's in middle Alabama, but it's to the east. It's below Auburn, and lower Alabama is often known for its poverty, and there are a lot of blacks settled in lower Alabama. It was probably majority black since it was founded, but it was actually founded by white settlers after the natives were pushed west of the Mississippi. Whites settled there. There were so many people working there like slaves, it became a majority black town.
Got it.
Another thing that was really interesting about it is you mentioned that that they used to have a hospital, but it closed down at some point. There was a college that was founded there. It's a famous historic
George Washington
college.
Carver.
Well, no, it was founded by Booker T. Washington, actually.
Okay. Ooh.
And he founded this college in 1881. This was still during segregation, Jim Crow, and I believe there were no slaves, but it was still segregation. So Booker T. Washington founded the Tuskegee Normal School for Colored Teachers, and it was basically like a trade school. It was a trade school founded to train teachers for the segregated school system. Anybody who was a freed man or a self-sufficient person, they could actually take classes at the school and learn a trade and establish their own business. So this was a historical black college that was established here. But as time went on, we experienced integration. There were a lot of programs and stuff were expanded. And then it became an institute, basically like a 2-year college. So you could get like a 2-year degree there. And then later on, it got graduate studies and it became one of the first historical black colleges, Tuskegee University, once it got its 4-year program. So anyway, because the hospital had shut down there and this college is building up in this town, there was obviously a medical part of the school. Of how to train to be a nurse or like to take care of people, you know, or to be a doctor. So the medical institute opened a university hospital, which I'm assuming it was a hospital because it was for the medical students. This is where the Tuskegee experiment, the infamous experiment, took place. And I thought that was interesting that a college that was originally for free men to make a better life for themselves was co-opted for this project by a government the public health system at that time. It wasn't, the CDC was also there that sponsored this, but the public health system is the entity that started the Tuskegee experiment at this college.
And it began in 1932. So we hadn't even put Nazis in power yet. That was just our stuff.
No, this was before the war, too. And this was interesting, too, because I believe at some point before the Tuskegee Air Base was established there during beginning times of World War II. So there were also a military presence in this town. And a lot of the people were, for this experiment, they were recruited from military establishments as well. So there were a lot of places in the local area that they advertised this experiment as like, oh, hey, if you take part in this experiment to study cures for syphilis, you'll get free healthcare and treatments from the government because the public health system is putting money in to study it here at Tuskegee Institute. So you have a lot of people at the local level that started to push this study in the local community.
They did it through the college?
Well, they did it at the college. Like I said, like Luke mentioned earlier, there was a hospital there, but it shut down and there was a need for medical attention, or there was a need for a medical clinic, at least in the area. But the Tuskegee Institute obviously had people studying to be nurses and doctors. So there was you know how most universities have hospitals attached to them so that the freshmen can go into the hospital?
Yeah.
Yes,
so that's why the test was done at the institute, not at it was at their hospital facility.
I remember when I tried to get into the fraternity house, they made me fondle cadavers.
No, thanks. But anyway, it was really interesting because when the study was established by the public health system, the local government and a lot of other affiliates actually went along with them and started promoting this to the local inhabitants of the county, which is Macon County in Alabama. the Macon County Medical Society, which is probably like a private society of doctors, they pushed this. The Tuskegee Institute obviously did because they were the place that you went for your treatment. The Alabama State and the Macon County Boards of Health, so that's both a state board of health and a local county board of health, endorsed this study. The Milbank Memorial Fund, which I'm assuming is like a local memorial fund for people that built the community, endorsed it. Local Black churches and local Black public schools endorsed this. And also local plantation owners endorsed this plan. And they probably donated some of their workers to partake in this. And eventually, once all these people were pulled in from these different places, they had about, 60 participants. But after doing all the initial tests for syphilis, about 400 of them already had it. So the study group was already established at this point. They just had to, I mean, literally, they just grifted through the local community.
They had 600 people in the study. 400 of them already had syphilis. And then they told them this is a 6-month study. But
to test treatments.
To test treatments. And then the study went on until 1970 fucking two.
I mean, that's like 40 years, dude.
That's a long time to have syphilis.
Yeah. And it's not 6 months.
You don't really get to have syphilis for that long.
And it's really, really messed up because the whole point of this experiment when it was started, when this experiment started, no known cure for syphilis. The whole reason they started it is to study what treatments would work for it. As the study progressed, it's really weird because it started in like 32.
Mm-hmm.
So in about 10, literally 11 years, in 1943, penicillin was discovered to be a cure for syphilis. Like, it was the antibiotic that actually killed the syphilis infection. And it was discovered in 1943. And after a few years of testing within the system and not on the way, in 1951, it became the official treatment. Like, if you went to your doctor and you had syphilis symptoms, they would probably give you penicillin at that point. But these people that signed up for the Tuskegee experiment, there were special efforts made to withhold these people from the treatment of penicillin or even getting in contact with information about penicillin being discovered, which is where the ethics issue comes in, is because these people had access to a treatment, and for some reasons that they give later, they choose not to purchase the treatment and give it to these people on these tests.
It goes so far as to censor the mail of the members of the test who are in the military to prevent them from learning about penicillin.
Yeah, like the Tuskegee Air Base. Whoa. I was talking about, the men that joined, like they allowed Blacks to join the military there. So a lot of Blacks were in the military when the Air Base was established there, designed by a Black architect, might I add. So a lot of the people on the military base were also sucked into this. But when the news of penicillin reached all of the other troops, the military higher-ups, they pulled it from their mail. They censored their mail so they wouldn't hear about it because they were part of the experiment.
This is a different episode, but it's well known that the Tuskegee Airmen were like some of the best dogfighters and airmen we had in World War II.
They're freaking legend. And yeah, Thank God for them. And it's really sad that some of them were preyed upon by these people.
Yeah, they actually helped protect us from fascism while they were being preyed upon by their own government.
I mean, for the large part, their successes in World War II weren't even recognized until the past 20 or 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Some pilot people knew about it, though.
Yeah, no, people knew about it because they saw them fight. And it's like, God bless these people for coming in. Like, they didn't even realize that they didn't care about recognition. They just wanted to fight, and like, thank God for them. Anyway.
Anyway.
That's another show, because that's a happier show than the Tuskegee experiment. I was reading an article about somebody that talked about this after it came out, that was in the public health system at the same time that this experiment was going on. So this is from an article that I read about. Why is this important today? This impacts us still today because this was a violation of personal trust with a doctor. And this is why people distrust like pharmaceutical industry and stuff today.
They did spinal taps on them and said, this is treatment, when they were just seeing how bad the syphilis had done to their organs, you know?
And by the way, during this time, a spinal tap was a terrible, agonizing and invasive procedure.
Yep. That's what women get when they get epidurals when they have babies. Yeah, it sucks.
They put straps on the chair. And they kind of just drill, poke a small hole in the back of your spinal cord.
They insert a needle that's about an eighth of an inch wide into your spinal column.
The way you tell it makes it sound less unpleasant than I want it to be.
Well, it is pretty, an eighth of an inch. As a graphic designer, that's huge. They did all sorts of this stuff and they lied and said it was treatment for the infection, which people in the public health system around this study, they knew that that wasn't a treatment. They knew they were just analyzing the patients. In this article I read, Dr. John Heller, who was the director of venereal diseases at the public system from 1943 to 1948, he actually stated these men's status did not warrant ethical debate. They were subjects, not patients. They were clinical material, not sick people. They were basically, what he was saying is that, like, lab rats, and that's not okay.
They didn't have the status to fight it, and so we could get away with doing whatever we wanted to them.
And that's another argument that these people used to continue the study. It's very interesting. But like, this was one of the first call outs in the public health system against the study. So there were many excuses used as the treatment of penicillin was being withheld from the subjects. Actually, one of the main reasons is that the fund that was giving all the money for the study to happen, the Julian Rosenwald Fund, was the benefactor of this. Like, basically, they fund the whole thing. So anyway, during the Great Depression, they experienced such a loss of assets that they were able to secure funding to buy the new treatment of penicillin, or like any of the other new treatments that they were finding, to provide to some of the counties that they were doing this experiment in. And Tuskegee is one of the main counties. They pretty much abandoned all of these men. They didn't give them any treatments throughout 40 years, even though there were treatments that were discovered and readily available. And then there, a third excuse, people controlling the study were saying, there's no other way that we're going to be able to study the end of syphilis, the end stages of syphilis, if there's a treatment for it that works. So we need to let the study continue on, because the whole reason we studied it was to see how people die of syphilis and what happened. And it's basically a free autopsy.
Which is all
what
just
they were offering, like that's what the study was for. But they lied to the people and they said the study was to find a treatment, and they withheld the treatment. And that's why this has become an ethical struggle that has pretty much defined our medical community since the 70s.
It's like even making that explanation for it is kind of them going out of their way to obscure the fact that they lied in the first place.
Yeah, well, yeah, totally. And it's just radical, because, you know, they tried to like make up all these excuses about it. Like, you know, it's for the benefit of mankind, like a few will die, but sacrifice will be worth it. But, you know, in 1972, it was all over. You know, all of these 40 years of dirty secrets hit the public. The person to break this news, it was Peter Bruxton, who stopped the Tuskegee syphilis study by telling his story to a reporter with the Associated Press. Any journalist could pick this story up. This guy just went to everybody and he said, this is what happened to me. I was part of the experiment. He worked on the experiment.
Oh,
the media had once, to stop it. Like the press,
well, the media
had to
took
get to
they
it.
Went they went on a sh- like once the Associated Press took it, like all of these rags, like main newspapers, like from across the country, and all of these gossip rags just took up the story like instantly, because it was just like so controversial. The public health system was actually still conducting the experiment on the day when the news broke to the mainstream.
Yeah.
And the only reason it ended was because people knew about it. And these people didn't even face any consequences when they were found out. They just kind of slinked back down into the bowels of whatever scientific foundation they'd find their next task with.
Yeah. And even another official from the same branch that first guy did, the first doctor I talked about, Dr. Donald Prince, said from the same venereal disease branch of the CDC, publicly stated the experiment was, quote, almost like a genocide. A literal death sentence was passed on to some of these people. And they also noted, they passed it on to their partners, their wives, and their children, because they let them go for so long. So the public outrage was huge after the disclosure in 1972.
I'd also like to point out that end-stage syphilis results in, like, straight-up psychosis. So even if you lived around these people and didn't catch it, you are suffering the effects.
If your husband goes crazy before you, you got to deal with him. And no one's helping you because the study said that they would treat them, but they won't. But when they died, they did take them for autopsies, you know, wow. to study what happened to their bodies. Maybe they were paid like $100 or so, but they did not disclose what it was. And that's the ethical problem. So maybe they took the study as a way to like figure it out or get a cure, but they were being lied to at the beginning. And that's the problem with this. After this came out in 1972, it took like 4 years of hot debate. This whole commission was formed to oversee the ethical treatment of disadvantaged and or poor people within the medical and psychology industry so that they couldn't be exploited anymore with experiments and all that stuff. This document that was written by this commission is called the Belmont Report, and it's very important in our modern practices of human and health services.
Bad there'll be like 1,000 more Belmont reports over the next 200 years.
I mean, we always had the Hippocratic Oath, but I mean, people have cheated that for 1,000, 2,000 years.
Well, so it's like,
what's to say that if you establish a new rule or an ethics guideline that anyone's going to give a fuck about that?
I look at like research fields or workers in research fields kind of the way that I look at cops, where it's like these careers are definitely attractive to a certain kind of person that likes to have power over others. Whereas a cops are often like your typical schoolyard bullies, you know, when they were kids. Maybe some of these researchers were just like these, whatever. Some of these researchers are definitely sadists and they get involved in this career so they can experiment on people.
Isn't that like the same thing we talked about in the MK Ultra episode? We did talk about the LSD experimentation, but there was like some guy that he basically was high all the time and experimented on people, and he was so distanced from them that he could do these horrible things. Oh, who was that, Luke?
It's in the MK Ultra?
Yeah, who was the dude that got high on LSD every day and like basically psychologically tortured people to
I don't remember his name. That's why we did the episode.
Yeah, you know
what?
You know who?
Yeah, but he was in charge. Yeah, he was like in charge of all these things in MK Ultra, and he himself was taking LSD constantly. Like some weird fucking mad scientist.
But it made him more sociopathic because he was like floating in the air and everybody else was on the ground, right?
Imagine taking acid and losing your sense of empathy.
I mean, no, but like he was at work.
Right. Yeah.
And he was probably doing Nazi meth too, which we'll talk about.
I understand that, but I just feel like if anything would make me want to torture people less, it would be acid.
I mean,
what a weirdo.
No, that's a fucking, we're talking about sociopaths.
Yeah. My point still stands.
There's always going to be sociopaths. It doesn't matter what happens. So
I feel like somebody could be a sociopath on E pretty easily, more than acid.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, so what do? We just push the button and kill him? Oh, yeah, let's do it. Yeah.
Hey, even though the Belmont report was published and there were new ethical rules to help our health system protect and support disadvantaged peoples from being exploited by the medical research community. I feel like this, not even I feel like, it's been proven that this experiment has had a lasting effect on public trust of the healthcare system. And it also has affected the average life expectancy of Blacks, specifically Black men, because a lot of times they don't study women enough to make a statistic for it. So we're going to just talk about Black men versus white men. So this is very interesting. There's been a gap since that happened between the healthcare for those two demographics. And there are a lot of papers written on this. And I found one that was really interesting from 1991 that documented that when there were trials for cures for HIV and AIDS during the 80s and the late 70s, there was an extreme marked lower participation in these programs from Blacks as compared to a whole with other races. So they were not coming to the trials to fix a disease that they knew they had. So one would only need to ask around and hear through the grapevine that they had taken on an extreme distrust of the medical community at this time. So with this distrust, I think there comes like kind of like a shift in how they take care of themselves, because after the Tuskegee experiment that came out and racism and eugenics were a huge, huge hot topic during the early and mid 1900s. All of these factors combined kind of added to the effect that Black people were not so keen on going to test new experimental drugs for ailments anymore. if you call it public health, but then they're all white doctors and you see the, in the news that they've poisoned people that look like you. Okay. This is caused the fact that they were negligent about the study and they didn't disclose anything to the people has caused more damage to our race relations in this country than I think any other like medical experiment could. And this to me explains why you're seeing a lot of black celebrities, icons doing these vaccine selfies and getting the vaccine on social media with a video to show other people. And then you see rap, like there was a rap video I saw last week called
Bust a Bus.
Vax That Thang Up.
Vax That Thang Up.
Oh, instead God. That reminds me. Oh,
my God.
It's bad. Click on it. It's right there. It's cringe as fuck.
Oh, no. Okay.
But the message from this video is before being down to smash on Tinder, you better get vaxxed. Like, don't get vaccinated so you can, like, take your mask off and suck some dick. Like, that's literally what the video is about.
Suck some dick. My mask on.
Or eat some pussy. I don't care. Like, whatever they want to do.
Y'all might remember these advertisements, but they were mainly aimed at teenagers. A couple of years back, they started doing these. It was the truth campaign of anti-smoke and anti-vape advertisements targeted at youngsters. And so they would use like extremely dated memes and shit to try and make it look cool not to smoke. Yeah. And they made a whole ass music video called "You Gotta Swipe It Left" about rejecting or your likelihood to be rejected people on Tinder who smoke.
Oh, if you smoking? Yeah.
Ooh. I don't know if anybody remembers these.
It makes me
want
to smoke more.
Painful. Yeah. Yeah, it did. Fuck.
No, I'm like, fuck you guys. Anyway, like another thing that's really interesting, not only the rap videos and all the celebrity appearances with this, but we have city mayors giving away taxpayer money for vaccine lotteries. And they partner with fast food and donut joints, giving away free junk food to lure poor people to get vaccine. I mean, like, oh, all poor people love junk food money, right? To see beneficial drug marketed with money, and they're dangling carrots. And they're also,
I like carrots.
They're all, I know, but they're pressuring the black community specifically because they're hesitant. But they're pressuring the black community specifically because they're hesitant. But they're pressuring the black community specifically because they're hesitant. And all of this, seeing all of this leaves a bad taste in my mouth personally. I don't blame people that suspect quote unquote free healthcare, free $100, free syphilis treatment is the same thing. It's the same lure as, oh, you get a free burger, free donut, free money. You could get a vaccine for free. It's like that.
It's
not
so creepy.
That much of a stretch.
I feel like right now America is kind of just dealing. It's reaping what it's sown in regards to its public relations. Nobody trusts the institutions that are in place anymore. And like even really during the pandemic when we were all on lockdown, like the government was being sketchy as fuck, not giving any kind of clear advisement.
Hard data.
Yeah, you know, so
going back on shit they said.
Oh, wear a mask. Don't wear a mask. Oh, wear a mask now. Wear two masks.
Like what?
It's, yeah. I was working
confusing.
Through the whole time I was working, and we didn't get any like packet of like, hey, these are the guidelines, and for a long fucking time, and it was just ridiculous.
But can we really be sure that the matter of ethics is an open and closed and shut case, and it's
well,
already taken care of with
we
that?
We should be able to trust people in charge. We should be able to trust people in
we
charge.
We should. But another thing is I want to mention before I go off my side of the conversation is that, you know, doctors since antiquity, since BC times, like before, like over 2000 years ago.
From before Instagram.
Way before that.
From before Pee Wee Herman. From
before
I Love Lucy.
From before Elvis Presley or whatever else your grandparents listened to.
Like way before that stuff.
Before Jesus, even.
What, dude?
Yes. The Hippocratic Oath is extremely old. And it's for over 2,500 years. And guess what? These atrocities and horrors continue to happen. Like we're going to talk about this. The Holocaust is one of them. If we talk about in the 50s and 60s, the sanitarium experiments and torture that went on with people that were mentally ill, that were sanitariums.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Eugenics programs. Planned Parenthood was founded by a eugenicist. Experimentation in prisons. injecting prisoners with random chemicals to see what happens, torturing them, depriving them of stimulation to see how long it takes for them to go crazy, experimentation in prisons, forced lobotomies. When someone was crazy or hysterical, back in the day, they would take out your frontal lobe. Like, these are things...
Guys.
These are breaking the Hippocratic Oath. The Hippocratic Oath means don't harm somebody that you're trying to treat. And the Tuskegee experiment violated that. It's like, we've had this law for a long time. And if anybody would like to read the Hippocratic Oath, be my guest.
I just want to throw this out there. Before the Kennedys were very big into politics, there was still one particularly rich Kennedy, like a patriarch of the family, who had decided that he needed to puff up his family's image because he wanted the Kennedys to be one of the most powerful families in America. And one of the first things he did was he took his loosest and most unruly daughter, Rose Kennedy, and got her fucking lobotomized.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
Rosemary. Was it Rosemary?
It was so fucked up what they did to her.
Yeah.
She spoke out and they lobotomized her.
Really? Anybody in your family could just drop you off at an institution and say, hey, scrape them. And you wouldn't really be able to do anything about it.
Boy, they crazy.
They would just take your
brain out of your nose.
You can still get just dropped off at like any kind of institution a day and fucking detained for 3 days. And they're likely to detain you because that's how they make money.
Hashtag free Britney.
Hashtag free Britney.
Free Britney.
Yeah.
Free Britney.
Dude, that's why I had to get out of working with autistic adults, because I didn't like the fact that it was my job to show up as an uneducated whatever and be like, here's your fucking pharmaceutical cocktail of things that will basically chemically lobotomize you and chemically castrate you. You know what I mean? I was just like, I can't. You know what? I never took no fucking Hippocratic Oath. So, of course, they'd send me to do it.
Would you like to take one right now?
And my company was... Sure. Amazing, by the way, because my company that I worked for was fucking amazing and was very good at working with our clients, but we didn't decide what our clients took. It was their fucking doctors, and they would send us to go with them to their little meeting, right? And there would be a pharmaceutical rep across the table telling the doctor about this new miracle drug that'll make this client like magically better, and it'll be so much better. And then they would end up taking that drug.
Yeah, that's actually kind of a uniquely American thing, too, is that the pharmaceutical companies will advertise to the doctors.
No. And the people. It's on TV. It's sick. And we need to stop.
Yeah, that's illegal in literally every other country.
You go to the doctor to find the treatment. You don't see it on TV. Fuck you.
It's like the dude was selling an Alienware.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
we got to read this.
I swear by Apollo Healer, by Asclepius, by Hygieia, by Panacea, and by all gods and goddesses, making them my witnesses, that I will carry out, according to my ability and judgment, this oath and this indenture, to hold my teacher in this art equal to my own parents, to make him my partner in my livelihood, when he is in need of money to share mine with him, to consider his family as my own brothers, and to teach them this art, if they want to learn it, without fee or indenture, to impart precept, oral instruction, and all other instruction to my own sons, the sons of my teacher, and to indentured pupils who have taken the healer's oath, but to no one else. I will use these dietary regimens, which will benefit my patients according to my greatest ability and judgment, and I will do no harm or injustice to them. Neither will I administer a poison to anybody when asked to do so, nor will I suggest such a course. Similarly, I will not give to a woman a pessary to cause abortion, but I will keep pure and holy both my life and my art. I will not use the knife, not even verily, on sufferers from stone, but I will give them place to such are as craftsmen therein. I don't even know what that last part means. Into whatsoever...
I'll explain.
Okay. Into whatsoever houses I enter, I will enter to help the sick, and I will abstain from all intentional wrongdoing and harm, especially from abusing the bodies of man or woman, bond or free. And whatsoever I shall see or hear in the course of my profession, as well as outside my profession, in my intercourse with men, if it be what should not be published abroad, I will never divulge, holding such things to be holy secrets. Now, if I carry out this oath and break it not, may I gain forever reputation amongst all men for my life and for my art. But if I break it and forswear myself, may the opposite befall me. Translation by W.H.S. Jones, whoever the fuck he was.
Hey, can I explain?
No.
I'm going to. Okay, here I go.
Thanks.
So I swear to Apollo, Healer, and all of the other gods, you are swearing an oath to a god, not a human.
All the gods and goddesses.
All the gods.
Of it's
healing.
Like how you pledge allegiance to the flag for the nation under God.
Yeah, but it's everybody. It's all the healing people. You're acting as an extension of healing gods. So you must be chaste and you must be forthright with what you're doing. To hold my teacher in this art to its own parents. Like, okay, be nice to people, right? Dietary regimens. Okay. Do not administer poison. Okay, I wanted to explain, like, apparently you got uncomfortable with not giving pests to women who wanted abortion.
Yeah, abortion is good. Do it.
The doctor doesn't do it. Guess who does it? The midwife or a witch. So that's it's a feminine affair. It has nothing to do with medical aiding somebody.
It's their business.
It's a witchy thing. And it's for women to understand and not for a doctor. Doctor will not kill a life. That is their whole point. And I really want to stress, into any house I enter, I will enter to help the sick. And I will abstain from wrongdoing and harm, especially from abusing the bodies of men or women, bond or free.
That includes slaves! Slaves!
Exactly.
It's in there. It's fucking in there. So that doesn't get you out if they're slaves.
No, it doesn't.
If you're somewhere that believes in slavery and you took it, it doesn't matter. They're still protected by the fucking Hippocratic Oath.
And something else that's very interesting in here is we laughed about, as well as outside my profession in my intercourse with men, shall not and would not be published abroad. I will never die holding such things to be holy. See, this is called patient-doctor confidentiality and is actually a legal thing where the doctor cannot divulge anything you say in the session.
Yeah, that's why your therapist can't giggle about your insecurities of your cock size.
It's an it's a security in the Hippocratic Oath that you have doctor patient confidentiality.
Just gonna throw a little advice out there too.
The only thing is if you say I'm gonna then they'll tell the FBI.
I don't even want you saying that over Discord. Fuck that.
No, but I'm just saying, like, they'll do it if
I could have told a joke instead of you get us on a watch list.
Oh, dude, I probably shouldn't even talk about this.
They have to keep it confident unless there's a greater reason for divulging the information. So any doctor that takes you and then tells your shit to everybody else, they're not a real doctor. You're supposed to swear to keep it a holy secret.
So
that's
this
why
brings
Dr.
us.
Dr. Phil is not a professional. Has Dr. Phil ever had to say the Hippocratic Oath?
No, that's what I'm saying. Is like people don't say it anymore. They don't take it seriously, and that's why I'm okay with skepticism. Like, I feel like a little bit of skepticism is really healthy, but I don't think that you should be so skeptical that you reject treatment entirely.
You shouldn't be so skeptical that you just become naive again.
Exactly. And this Tuskegee experiment, in my humble opinion, it pretty much derailed the whole point of being open and having confidentiality and openness and transparency with the patient. Like it set back racial tensions in our country. And there's a lot of articles written on this. Is the Tuskegee experiment actually it mentally damaged blacks on a level that's like we don't understand.
Well, it's like culturally transmitted trauma.
Yeah.
It's like how a lot of Jewish people who are still alive today, even if they haven't seen the Holocaust, suffer traumatic effects from its story. Yeah, also, this genetic memory.
Yes, but this is another thing I looked up today is called prudence, which means caution. When you have a genetic memory or something that happened to your ancestors that you understand was not a good thing, you need to have caution when proceeding. But it doesn't mean to reject, right? It means to have caution proceeding.
I would say one of the more interesting things about The Shining is that it seems that Stanley Kubrick subscribes to this idea of racial memory. And subsequently, it could be argued that Kubrick purposefully put in symbols into the film that would trigger ancestral memory in an attempt to update the ancestral memory with a broader and more coherent symbol set that could more deeply inform that that precaution that you were talking about. Prudence.
This is all subconscious and you're not aware of it happening.
Because Kubrick was attempting to make a Holocaust film. He couldn't pull it off. It just depressed him and he gave up. Then he made The Shining. And for someone who made a film about a giant black screen being a tool of, you know, generational instruction, it was his attempt to update our subconscious, you know, and people that maybe didn't have it in their memory into the specific vibration of fascism and totalitarianism, both how it happens in the meta level and in the on the family level.
Are you talking about 2001?
Talking about both, yeah, but mostly The Shining. But I'm saying, is someone who is using the technology. This is, okay, the guy who made 2001, right? About a giant screen that informs generational destiny.
I mean, Kubrick wrote it, but it was, what is it, Asimov? Or who wrote it?
I know, but I'm saying Kubrick knew, like, knew his tool. He knew the power of his tool. He knew the power of his medium, and he attempted to use it in those terms.
Trying to program people.
Definitely. Our evolutionary, he was trying to save us. That movie is a way for us to understand the mechanism of how that evil functions in a symbolic way, in a context that maybe non-Jews would understand, you know?
It's a warning of like we were talking about, like how these experiments, these non-consensual experiments were done by luring people in with free healthcare. Here's $100. Here's a free burger. It's the same thing. It's the fox luring the sheep into his hole so he can eat it. That's all it is.
And the way they accomplished this in Nazi Germany was first on the medical community, their whole genocide, because once they could get people to deny and pervert and reject their Hippocratic Oath or bend it, then that could be extrapolated to the rest of the community. So the first people they preyed on were the mentally disabled, and they worked from there.
And here's the thing, is that they argued that they shouldn't reproduce because they'll make more mentally people. And it's the same thing in Tuskegee with blacks. It's like, it doesn't matter if they die because they're like animals. Anytime a human looks at another human and thinks that they're lesser or an animal, I am suspicious as fuck, because that's exactly what was happening right here.
Silence, profligate.
You know, like, so New Vegas.
Going right into it?
Yeah, get Malachor in here.
Yeah, come on, Malachor. Right. Come in here.
Yeah, get Malachor in this bitch.
World War II, Nazi Germany, obviously we all know that they were obsessed with this idea of a pure race. Twins, they were of great interest to the SS. From what I've read, they wanted to figure out why twins were born also. That was very important to them. If they can figure out how Nazi mothers could consistently make twins, then you're like doubling the population growth. One Nazi SS doctor named Joseph
Mengele.
Yeah, Joseph Mengele was probably the most notorious of all the doctors at Auschwitz. Joseph thought he could find all of his answers regarding his genetic queries by experimenting on twins. Mengele was regarded as one of the top doctors in Germany, but he was swiftly given the nickname the Angel of Death due to his practices.
Angel of Death!
I'm sorry, fucking Slayer. It's the Slayer song. You know the one.
Yeah. It's fucking great. Yeah. I wonder if they are talking about this guy, but I doubt it. They're just talking about like Santa.
No, they're talking about him. There's a line about twins. It's like fucking something about being conjoined at the head, only matter of time till you rip yourselves apart.
Oh, that's right.
Pumping fluid in your brain, pressure in your skull starts pushing out your eyes. Angel of Death! Yeah, Angel of Death.
He managed to get 1,500 pairs of twins to experiment on. The test started out, he would, like, I guess right after they get out of the trains, you know, he would tell them to go left or right, and one of the lines would be for death and one of them would be for life, the ones that would live to be experimented on. But he'd measure them from head to toe, and you know, at the start he seemed like maybe he had an idea of what he was doing, but eventually his test would just be whatever he thought up. That was cruel.
I have like a little bit of a theory that researchers and people in positions like this, when they're not competent enough to come up with like new experiments or purposeful work, they just start kind of like toying with people just repetitively so they can keep their job.
Fucking around and finding out.
Yeah. Mengele doesn't strike me as particularly brilliant. Like, he had some discoveries, but mostly like You have to realize there were researchers working beneath him.
Yeah, some. I think Noma. It was a disease that he had. Some like a doctor, like smart girl. Find some treatment for it.
These days is Romani.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Whatever. Go on.
That one's fine. You can't say that's the one.
Yeah.
Well, they called them like gypsy camps, whatever. I mean, I thought that was the culture. I don't know. I'm not saying it in a derogatory way. Either.
I mean, me neither. I thought it was cool.
You know.
My dad and my sister used to tell me that they bought me from when I was 3.
Oh, no, sure. My grandparents say they just used to talk different back then, too.
I mean, I like they're cool magic people that travel around.
Awesome. I like Romanis.
Yeah, well, I live with one.
Fuck you.
Fuck me, huh?
Okay.
Yeah.
Fine.
What are you going to do about it?
All right.
No, have fun.
So Josef Mengele's one of these special kinds of Nazis. He really didn't need to be drunk or high to carry out his duties like many of the SS officers at Auschwitz. He also wasn't like Otto Rahn, where the second he saw it, he was like, oh, Himmler, save me. This guy. Okay, he got married to this young blonde woman that he couldn't quite prove like one of her ancestors, so they never made it into the SS book. But this was like, other than that, the ideal Nazi couple. Like, they would march around Auschwitz, come into work with a perfect outfit on, white lab coat, black SS boots, with a cigarette, whistling. On his way to the sorting platform. Like, he was walking on fucking sunshine all the time. And he carried out his duties with focus, gladness, and determination. He never showed any hesitation, and he did what he was told all the time. So he was considered the ideal SS officer. He was the ideal Nazi. And the stuff he did was so fucked up. It would be the doctors that'd be standing on those sorting platforms. You walk up to the doctor and he would either point his thumb, which meant this person lives, or he'd point with a stick and it meant that person goes to the gas chamber. And Mengele was also one of these people where he considered himself a devout Catholic. He also was kind of good with kids. So it was told that while the other kids were like hiding under their bunk because they knew some bad shit was going to happen, you know, Mengele would come in and be like, oh, you don't need to be afraid. And he would, you know, he would lure the kids and give them candy and stuff like that, and then he would personally vivisect them right afterwards.
Yeah, he would like
monster
deliver the babies of some of the moms and like kill them right there, or sometimes he would let the baby live just to and chop the mom's tits off and just to watch her baby die
so they couldn't breastfeed.
Yeah. It's so horrible. This fucking asshole.
Of babies that he delivered. For a while, he even took like an 8-year-old boy on to be like his little pet and had him march around in boots and a white lab coat, taking notes for him on a notepad. And then when he got bored of him, he walked him personally hand in hand to the gas chamber.
Jesus, goddamn Christ. This is Mengele is also one of the Nazis who escaped. Yep. We know that he was in South America and we know where he was. He's dead now.
Well, he was a good Catholic.
Hey, you know what? The fucking Catholic Church was based in Italy. And who was an Axis power in World War II?
Italy.
Dude, they got away to South America because of the church. I'm sorry. I don't care if people fucking hate me because of that, but it's the truth. Like,
it wouldn't be the first evil religious organization.
No, it wouldn't. Well,
the Vatican's like, that's my fucking territory, dude. That's why Google had they had their tagline, don't be evil.
Yeah.
Don't be evil.
What happened
and
to that?
And it's like, they got rid of that because they don't want, that's their fucking business. They don't want any competition at all.
So he died of a stroke while swimming on the beach, and he never once showed remorse for his actions ever.
Some of those actions were transferring large quantities of blood from one of the twins to the other, injecting chemicals.
So one just kind of like shrivels up like a raisin, and the other one just pops.
Basically,
and they both die.
And they put drugs in them too.
Yeah, they just inject
sign me up.
They don't, and we still don't know what the hell they were injecting them with here at Auschwitz, because it was the Soviets who liberated that camp. And they took all the documents.
Oh.
And yeah, they haven't disclosed their findings to the public ever.
Or maybe they got rid of them, or they burned or something.
I don't know.
There's still records being found.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nazi. I imagine people took some of, just took some of this shit home. Like there are things that just went as souvenirs that are actually incredibly valuable historical artifacts.
So Nazi experimentation was not limited to twins. Other concentration camps like Buchenwald, Natzweiler, Sachsenhausen, Neuengamme, they infected prisoners with diseases like hepatitis, malaria, and typhoid fever, which is what some of our German listeners are going to want to do after they hear my pronunciation. Bone grafting, x-rays, surgeries, drugs, and sterilization experiments were conducted at the women's Ravensbrück concentration camp. Here, wound and bone infections were studied. Wounds were created by various means on the women, then packed with different materials like dirt, sawdust, and broken glass. Many women that survived the experiments were still sent to the gas chamber afterwards.
Oh my God, that's so awful.
At Dachau, tests were conducted to determine survival rates with different air pressures. Prisoners were put into chambers where the air pressure was lowered and increased over and over until they died. This was a really fucking painful way to die. Tests regarding fatal levels of seawater consumption as well as hypothermic temperatures were conducted. Temperatures were continuously lowered until death occurred, or the subject was forced to drink seawater until they died.
Oh.
Fatal levels of seawater consumption. Why do you need to test that shit?
Because they didn't think these people, they thought they were animals.
But I'm understanding that, but what the fuck do you even learn from fatal levels of seawater consumption? Like,
well, you find out how much seawater it takes to kill someone, and then you tell your soldiers, if you drink this much seawater, you'll definitely die.
How fucking valuable is that piece of information? Nobody's drinking seawater.
They kill people for it.
This is like the Nazi version of busy work.
This is what I'm saying. This is just shit that he's doing to keep his job.
It hurts my heart.
Polish POWs at Auschwitz who refused to talk.
Limited imagination. Sorry, I had to do the pinhead.
So at Dachau, experiments were conducted for brainwashing and consciousness control. Here they ran tests with mescaline on inmates. So that was at Auschwitz and Dachau, I guess, is where they used psychedelics, supposedly.
I would not like to be on mescaline at Dachau. I would not like to be on mescaline at Dachau.
Let's say if I was one of like the guards, I wouldn't want to
let some people fucking go.
That you just say, try to free everyone. You're like, it kicks in. You're like,
oh my god, let them out.
You're like, this is wrong. So once the mescaline kicked
in, I'd start striking up conversations with them and then crying because they're humanized now.
Yes.
Yeah, you really wouldn't want to be anyone taking fucking mescaline at Auschwitz. So once the mescaline kicked in,
wouldn't want to be anyone at Auschwitz.
Never. So they would interrogate the prisoners, claiming to be controlling their minds, and then try out different techniques. I don't know why I laugh. These tests.
We are controlling your minds.
We are controlling your minds. What will you do now?
Push on the Lederhosen.
I guess it's really.
Put on the Lederhosen.
So these.
Yeah.
This is fucked up.
Yeah.
It proved to be highly effective at accessing people's innermost secrets. That's fucked up. When the Americans liberated Dachau, they took the findings for themselves to utilize in their own MK Ultra experiments.
Operation Paperclip. That was nice.
I just used my own vocal cords. Thank you.
I'm going to show you up, though.
Operation Paperclip is legit.
Operation
some
Paperclip.
Shit.
Ooh, no, sorry. No, let him do that.
Do it again.
Echo.
Do it again. Stop.
Operation Paperclip.
That wasn't. Nah, you got me beat.
Operation Paperclip.
Okay, yeah, tell us about it.
Now, you should go listen to our MK Ultra episode to get the deets. But this is like the most crazy conspiracy theory you could think up, where it's like you're in a mental hospital and then suddenly your doctor wakes you up in the middle of the night, locks you in a room and plays this repeating message that's like, kill your mother for like 24 hours without letting you sleep, and then releases you back into the normal population. And then you try and tell people and they're like, okay, dude, you're crazy. They like literally did that to people.
Like yo, hey, I'm gonna kill my mother. Like, how about you?
These experiments just ranged from like weird and surreal experiences that were like kind of just fucking bizarrely annoying. Like, I don't think that would actually make anybody kill their mother, you know?
No, it made people crazy. People who were in mental hospitals for some bullshit reason ended up being legitimately psychologically damaged, and there are survivors that talk about
it. They chose people who were already vulnerable.
Well, yes, they did it at schools.
Concern.
It's just
they
like
had no concern for people that were genetically inferior to them.
It was just
so
like
they
Tuskegee.
Would use everyone, not just Jews, disabled people, mentally ill people, retarded people. They
students.
Would all of them.
The SS is just the world's kinkiest LARP.
They would focus on hospitals, the mentally ill, schools, and of course, military men, because they didn't have any fucking rights anymore.
And they're kind of dumb to begin with. And
oh,
no
that's
offense.
Not true.
Don't you say that about our God.
No, yeah, I love said. Them. I love them. It takes a huge
damn
set
true.
Of balls to do that. But at
and
the same time.
And that's just, you know.
Nah, American soldiers are the smartest in the world, dude. Fuck that.
Have you ever met a jock that's like really intelligent and he could go through school and be in academia and like make millions of dollars writing books? No,
yeah.
They just join the
no,
military.
Nah,
yeah.
Dude. Americans are trained to take two fucking ranks up. That's why we don't scatter like ants when the shit goes south and we fucking win. We're the smartest military in the fucking world.
And we love each other. That's a big point.
Even if the other person is really weird and of another religion, because everybody's green. You're all green.
We're on the same team.
So something like that. Unless you're like being tested on or whatever, experimented on. In that case,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
But a lot of these countries, like when they test,
we're just being
like,
real.
We were talking about the Tuskegee at that point. This was like right before integration. So, and it actually happened. It continued on after integration.
Way
why,
after.
That's why it's problematic. Which can you imagine what other places are doing to different people right now if this happened in Nazi Germany?
China.
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 I'm sorry. I came down
America,
with the
guys. We
right
want
now.
To get that. We want some of that sweet, sweet Chinese revenue. We got to be sure to take all the black people off the episode posters. Because the Chinese people think they're demons.
Oh, like
they
in Star Wars?
Dirty demons.
Hey,
yes.
Don't generalize
yes.
all of them. It's just this, it's a systemic problem.
Well, it's like this cultural thing. It's like this cultural thing where they see having dark skin as being indicative of something negative. But also, I just think it's like incredibly scummy that, surprise, surprise, the fucking American entertainment companies don't have the character to keep the black people on their poster.
Did you guys know that the Disney Mulan live action movie had a dedication in the credits
to
for
Mao.
The Chinese government for allowing them to film on Uyghur concentration camp land?
Oh, yep. That's fucked.
They're killing Muslims.
They could have filmed
China
in Taiwan.
And they don't give a fuck. And guess what? If you move there, you can never be a citizen because you're not Chinese.
Go to Taiwan, the free China.
Yeah, or Hong Kong, which is not part of China. Thank you very much.
I thought it was like after the lease.
All right, now I got a Black Hawk helicopter over my fucking house right now. I'm not even
them.
Kidding. No, seriously. I'm not even kidding.
Like a good time to...
That's your fault for living in California.
If you want to hear the rest of the show, please head to www.patreon.com/thewholerabbit, where if we've been demonetized for this episode, you might hear the extended episode for until everyone else finds out and this show ends up getting buried along with all of the other Scientology artifacts to prepare for L. Ron Hubbard's return to the mortal plane. Thank you, everybody. Eat carrots and shoot lasers.